who you give your children to in marriage is one of the most important decisions you will ever make in your lifetime when you're considering your multi-generational legacy. If you're building a family culture that's supposed to last 200 years, then hoping that your child goes out into the world and they can somehow magically discern whether this person is going to stick with them for 60 years, come hell or high water in their marriage, you have faith in a fantasy that I don't possess. Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Good day. This is Steve Manuel, your Abraham-loving host. I got a treat for you. Within the last 2 years, Mark and I really miraculously, I really think it was God's providence, we came across a couple named Pat and Chandra Lynch. You might have heard us saying that we recently did a conference out in California. Well, it was for their church. And wow, we got more exposure to their family than we had had previously. They are so, they're so impressive. And together, the Lynches have figured out something about regarding giving your daughters away in marriage. And so you're really going to benefit from this conversation between me and Pat Lynch. Pat Lynch, I appreciate you joining us on a Monday, because you're a pastor of a church. So I know that you are spent with the, and I was just talking to you about the Monday feeling of trying to, I guess, flush out, you just bore your heart for people all day. And now you got to have some kind of recovery and get ready to do it all again. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think I will have said this in an introduction, but just to tell you, I'm going to sing your praises before I get you on and just tell people that the way that your family works, I just believe it's a beautiful symphony that happens with your family, and your relationship with your wife is very cool. It's very, how can I say, it just feels hospitable. I feel like you guys could be, I almost feel like you guys could be sitting having a conversation with each other, and I feel like I could just sit down with you and you wouldn't change pace and you just keep going and you would just include me. It just feels like there's a hospitality to the culture of your family that's super attractive. You guys have obviously been through some stuff because you're just, you guys have that easy confidence with the way that you deal with family. You guys are just so calm, but you have so many moving parts in your family. And I thought one thing particular that would be helpful for our people to listen to would be the way that you deal with daughters. So I want to center down on that. But Mark and I were recently out in California spending time with you guys. By the way, we're putting a little bit of a push on, we're going to get to daughters, but we're putting a push on our people that we loved what we did in San Marcos so much that we're trying to tell our people, would you bring us to your church so that we might have more experiences like that?
Yeah.
Would you give us a little blurb on what the conference was like in your church and what it's been like since? We haven't talked about that, but I'll just put you on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, look, going into it, you know, Chandra, my wife and I, right, met you guys and have done some work with you guys. And then I think bringing you guys into the church, our hope is that we could really help families kind of find good center and foundation and bedrock for what it is that God actually created family for, and help provide health in that foundation. I think there's a lot of families that have structure. There's formation, but I don't know that it's really on healthy foundation. So that was the goal. We really were desiring for you guys to be able to bring something that, one, we don't necessarily feel like we're the experts on, but we just in our conversations with you felt like you guys really had a voice and something to add. And it was, I think, deeply formative for our church culturally in Southern California to have you guys come in and have you guys, that's a grandson. Hi, buddy. Come here.
This is success. This is what success looks like.
This is my grandson, Kitakoa.
Fantastic.
So, hey, buddy, you're going to go with your aunt. Here, auntie. Go on. Block that door. Thanks. Oh, my gosh. So we live generationally. So welcome to our world. We live generationally in our home. So yeah, look, I think one of the biggest pieces of fruit from you guys dropping in, it radically shifted the landscape of when people would hear Chandra and I talk about family. They heard us.
Right.
But when you guys came in, there were very real aha moments for people where they said, I've heard you years. Some people knew, have known us for years. We've heard and observed you guys. We get it. We understand. And I'm talking the first night we were together for just under 2 days with you guys. And the first night people were like, we get it. We had no idea. And so the fruit of that really on the back end has been, we've got families that have engaged in the process of how to align their lives in order with the five capitals, how to bring support to one another. And so now there seems to be a little bit more of a culture where it's beginning to grow and broaden, where there's families going after something together. And they're not just going alone, which was our goal, especially where we live, to really try to create a broader community where we can be shoulder to shoulder with some other families. And that has been massive. Healing. I think people, you know, one of the things that you guys really helped, I think, catalyze was healing in families that needed to happen. And some of those families we may have known or we may have had conversations, but just hearing things and being in an environment that you guys created doing what you do, I think it really helped catalyze decisions to say, you know what, we've been sitting too long. We know what needs to be done. And I was having real conversations with couples where they're like, it's been 5 years, it's been 3 years. And we need to get healthy. We need to get things in order. So deeply appreciative. And I wouldn't even say we've seen the total fruit of it, but there was a ton of seed sown into the ground and planted. And that's what I'm excited about.
That's great. Well, I've said it to you, but I'll say it here again, that it was a little bit unfair in that you guys did this hard plowing work for years and years. And just for people to see your family, they come across your family and go, now, what's the magic sauce that's happening there?
Yeah.
And so you have been teaching and provoking, et cetera. And we kind of just swoop in and just go, you know, we're just saying the same things, but there's something about cross-pollination and then something pops. So anyways, yeah, you guys deserve all of the credit for what you're seeing around you. And I bless all of it. Now, I have daughters. My oldest is 15. Mark has daughters. His oldest is 15. And we are on the cusp. We're looking over the fence at dating and courtship life and not knowing at all how to handle any of that stuff. And here's all we know. American system, broken. Kingdom system, got to be different, but has anybody articulated what that is? What's the system that we need to put in place? And the reason I got off on the tangent of the conference is because I remember sitting beside your daughter and son-in-law at our Shabbat meal and thinking, well, these people, I could go the distance with these two people right here. I love this dude. And all I knew about him before I sat down next to him was he's your son-in-law and you have figured something out about marrying your daughters off to great dudes. So that's what I want to talk about. But first, just give us the lay of the land of your home, your children, your grandchildren, who lives in your house. just tell us that, give us the landscape of the generations of your family.
So we live generationally. So we have seven daughters. You know, people ask, I don't know that anyone would assume whatever, but same wife, same marriage, out of the love that God, you know, has created covenant out of my wife and I, we've had seven kids. So seven daughters.
And the weird thing is that your wife looks 35.
She looks way younger than me. Yeah. It's, uh-huh. It's incredible. Our oldest daughter is 25. Our youngest is 5. And so the age breakdown is 25, 23, 21, 19. We jump to 14. And then we have a 9-year-old and we have a 5-year-old. And in terms of our home structure, our oldest and her husband and our 2 grandkids, I have a granddaughter she's almost 3. I have a grandson who's 14 months. They live with us. And so we've got multiple generations living in the home in that regard. Our next 2 daughters are married. They do not live with us with their husbands. And then all of our younger girls, the remaining 4, are obviously all with us. And so our house is constantly bustling with energy and people and every mark of generation. So we've got young adults who are young married, young career life. We've got young, like that kind of just out of high school. We've got our 14-year-old who's a freshman and she's in that world of like exploration and going, okay, what's life got in front of me? And then our younger ones are just, we just want to go ride our bikes and try to get on our scooters as much as possible. And I'm holding on for dear life, I feel like sometimes, but, yeah, prior to that, just as a side note, my wife's mom, awesome little native Hawaiian, actually lived with us for 4 years and she passed away last year. So we had at one point, we had 4 generations.
Now that's amazing.
In the home. And it was incredible to see, for my daughters, to see what grandma was able to just, even in her being around them, was able to pass on to them. And I think it can be taken for granted. And so I think what it's left us, though, I bring that up to say, I think now Chandra and I, as still parents and now grandparents, to not take for granted just the sheer structure of our home and the ROI that's on the back end of it that we don't yet understand, or we may not see, but our children and our children's children will see one day.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm going to speak as the representative of all of the normal suburban Americans who are looking through the peephole of this fence at your life. Is it fun, or do you feel out of control? Do you wish you could escape sometimes?
No, it's the best thing. It's the best thing ever. I don't feel like I can escape. However, let's be rational. There are times when Chandra and I, you know, we're like, we're gonna go for a walk, just the two of us. It's very interesting. Our family. It's even hard for me to even talk to you about it. It elicits just such a deep emotion. Our family, we long to be with one another. There's such a tremendous connection that we have with one another that we at times feel a desperation to be close. And whether it's my kids who are not living at home, we just miss each other. We do a lot of life together, but it's not something that it's not a switch that was turned on. It was something that was cultivated since the time they were babies. And that goes into parenting, and that goes into my relationship with my daughters as a dad.
I think a lot of parents, I know them. I mean, I was in youth work. I know that parents they don't have a strong culture in their homes. There might be no culture. There's nothing magnetic. There's no gravitational pull to the home. They take the kids to church. They make sure that they're exposed to some basic biblical truths. Mm-hmm. And then when the kids go off to college, the parents cross their fingers and hope the kids will hold on to faith.
Yeah.
And that's not the plan. So wow. I just want to say with your family, it's so clear to me, there is such a gravitational pull because of critical mass, among other things, but your week is based around your family. Your year is based around your family. And when a kid grows up, they would not be consciously making the decision, do I believe the claims of Christ anymore? That wouldn't even enter into their minds. Their thought is going to be, as they grow up and get into like earning years or marrying years, their thought is going to be, I must stay part of this family. That's yeah. all that they think. So if they're going to stay connected to the family, it makes sense. Then the spouses will enter into the life of the family. It makes sense that, well, our family does these spiritual observances. Well, I guess I do these spiritual observances as well. I think that we kind of overhype spirituality and underplay the practicality of family life. And God's intention is that those two things come together mm-hmm. and they produce a culture that your child is a part of. Mm-hmm. There's a story that's being told in your family. And when the world gives some bizarre, it barfs up some weird, you can be whatever gender you want to be story, they look at it sideways and go, that's not the story that's being lived out in my home at all. So I just throw that out to people, because some people think, well, if we could get our kids to read the right books and we could help them better be apologists for the gospel, et cetera, maybe none of those is going to be as strong as the story that you're telling with your family. So forgive me for that sermonette, but you're such an obvious example.
Yeah, I think in so many ways, the story, if I summarized it, maybe metaphorically, is the story that we want our kids to have very deeply in their heart is the story that's written in the home that they're raised in. And the story that's produced is not what's actually read on physical page, but what's read in physical proximity to people and a life that says, hey, I understand when I step outside the door, the story and the narratives that are being told to me, but there is a story that is much deeper, that's been going on for a much longer time, that has proven to me, not just informed me, but has actually formed me. So if I'm formed by this story of my home, that keeps me from conforming to the story of the world. And there is a trust as a parent to say, if this is the story that's really being sown into the hearts of our home and the people that come into contact with our home, there is a trust factor to trust that when our kids, it's when they're faced with another story, that they're going to rely on the truths that they know are evident from what they've seen. And so I just think we're telling a story in our home.
That's so good. I totally agree yeah. with you. Okay. We're still not on the topic that I wanted you to talk about, which is seven daughters. You've yeah. married off three of them successfully so far.
Correct.
How'd you do that? What do you do? So I want to know, what did you do? And I also yeah. want to know, what are you telling the 14-year-old right now to like yeah. lay the set the stage for what's going to be happening?
It's a question that I get asked a lot. So I'll start with my oldest. She's 25 years old. She's a mother now of two. And the day that she sat down with us and told us there was an interest in this boy, we kind of already had an inclination that there was an interest there. But we ended up, herself and me and her mother ended up sitting and having a conversation. And I think, let me just start with this. Step one, that cannot be your first conversation. the first conversation that I had with my oldest, I remember driving her to school when she was 6 years old and she was giggling. We homeschooled them, but there was a couple of days on campus they had with other kids, and her and my second oldest were in my truck and they were giggling in the back seat. And I said, what are you giggling about? And they were giggling with one another over a boy that my oldest thought was cute. And they were being kind of shy with me about it. I said, hey, so you think this boy's cute? And she's like, you know, and, my other daughter is like, kind of like starts referencing mom, like my wife. And I said, hey girls, listen, who knows more about boys? Does mom know more about boys or does dad? And they looked at me and I said, well, I'm a boy. So I'm like the expert on boys because I am a boy. Your mom knows a lot, but she's a girl. And I said, so I know the most about boys. So who do you think you should talk to the most about boys in your life? And they said, dad. And so that conversation was setting a tone in our life, that the conversation of there's a boy I'm interested in, I think I might want to marry him type of conversation, started in the back seat of a truck driving to school and taking the opportunity. I didn't shut it down. Boys are bad. I didn't do any of that. I just said, here's an open door opportunity to begin having dialogue with my daughters. And then we would just set up basic practices where we would intentionally have me play parts in their life that typically, I would say socially, mom would typically do. Here's an example. I have a 14-year-old right now, and she's a freshman in high school. And she came to me and she said, hey, dad, now I want you to understand, we homeschool her, and her on-campus days, she's on campus 2 days a week, in an enrichment program, there's 15 students in the entirety of her high school surrounding. Okay. She comes to me and she says, hey, dad, we're going to have like a school dance. And I go, oh. And she said, but I need a dress. And I said, oh, okay. Need a dress? And she goes, yeah. And she goes, the most exciting part about this dance was I know that what you do is you're the one who goes and shops with all of my older sisters for all their dresses when they were growing up, because you wanted to be the one to pick out the dress because you knew there was one dress that you would not see until I walked down the aisle.
Love that.
I'll tell you what, like something that we started doing with my oldest, I had no idea the power of this, that what I'm doing is I'm building bridges, I'm building relationship, I'm building conversation, I'm building comfort. And I think the other part is that what we're eliminating is silos in the family. Where if we create silos in the family, then what we do is we create individualism. And yes. in this mindset of independence and individualism, it's about the child is like, it's about me. So the day that they sit on the couch and they say, hey, I think there's this boy I'm interested in. If it's about them, then I'm there just to write a check. I'm there to serve them. But when my daughters, through just a lot of these different types of acts and rhythms, when we get to finally have that conversation, it's actually not an individual conversation. It's a family conversation.
Right.
And so, I think it shifts things a little bit. So our kids don't date, you know, I know it's very countercultural, but our kids don't date. Now it doesn't mean they don't have interests, but they don't have exclusive relationships with boys. There's nothing that Shander and I could find that was necessary for that to happen. There's a lot that can be learned in family settings. And first and foremost, family setting is huge for us. And so if there was a boy that was, there was some interest, number one, I'm going to go back to these dances. If a boy asked my daughter, hey, I want to go to the dance with you. My daughter, I would never say a word. My daughter on their own. I had built such a deep relationship with them that on their own, they would say, if you want to go to a dance with me, you have to sit down and ask my dad. What I'm doing in that is that the relationship is primed for the day that marriage comes, that you need to sit down with my dad and have that conversation. But that wasn't a one-off conversation. There was conversations throughout the years that boys would say, hey, I want to go to this dance with you, or hey, I want to spend some time. You need to talk to my dad. You need to have a conversation with my father. And so along the way, there was lots of boys that would sit and have conversations with me. Hey, you know, Mr. Lynch, I want to ask your daughter to go to this dance. And here, side note, this is what I say, dads, listen, there are times that your daughter doesn't want to go to the dance on an exclusive level with that boy, but because of social pressures, they don't know how to say no. And so what I would do is my daughter would say, so-and-so wants to sit with you and ask you if they can take me to a dance. Okay. And my first question, is that something that you want to do? And there's been times that my daughters would say, no, I don't. So I was then able to sit with this boy and say, hey, listen, no, I don't think that's going to work. And every single conversation I've ever had with a male who has any interest at any level in any of my daughters, I basically give them the hack to actually having any chance of developing a relationship with my daughters, which is, it sounds odd, but I give them the absolute answer. And I do it so that my daughters can watch them and they can gauge whether or not they have the maturity that I've helped them understand that they need to find in a man.
What's okay? The hack?
So this is what I tell the boys. Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you no right now. She's not going to go to the dance with you. However, here's what my daughter is watching right now. She's watching you intensely to see what your response is to no. Because there are going to be times in her life that she's going to say no to something. And I've taught her to watch. And if you respond in a negative manner, you have told her everything she needs to know about whether or not she should be exploring any relationship with you. The best thing you can do is not go off the deep end after saying no to you. I remember one time I said, I had this conversation with a boy. Within 1 week, I mean, my daughter is his everything in this young boy's brain. A week later, there's this other girl at school that he is now paying all attention and affection. And my daughter, it's really good because, again, it's another layer of trust. And she's like, oh, okay, dad. You know, she understands that I'm their protector. And I'm actually telling this kid, like, by the way, I've told every one of them this, by the way, this isn't just my daughter. Every woman is looking for the confidence and the security of strength in a man. And if you don't respond in a positive manner, you're done. Any chance that you have, any hope that you have of any relationship with my daughter is done. But you're 100% in control of that. I'm not shutting you down. You're going to shut yourself down. And that's been really formative for them because they understand that I'm on their side. But I'm also not like super rigid, like, you know, get away from boys. They're the devil.
Yeah.
I'm not doing all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so by the time my daughters get to the point where they're exploring a little bit more of, hey, there's probably this gentleman who's exhibiting now, based on my experiences, he's exhibiting maturity. He's exhibiting the things that my dad has said that I want to look for. By the time that conversation happens, believe it or not, the family is involved. So sisters are speaking into that person.
Nice.
Friends that we hold close are speaking in, you know. Now that I have son-in-laws, my son-in-laws actually are kind of watchmen. And they're like,
I bet.
Hey, this is what we observe. When they're away from you, Pat, this is what we see. It's much more of a family gathering.
Right.
We invite boys into being a part of our family, not into a relationship with our daughter.
Yeah. Let me just react to a couple things. Number one, I hear you saying there's no such thing as having a relationship with my daughter without having a relationship with me.
100%.
Because I'm her protector.
Yep.
So
no question.
The sort of American movie thing of, you know, the college girl, we hear you've been spending time with this young man. When do we get to meet him?
Yeah.
That will never, ever happen on my watch.
Correct.
And I also hear that your job isn't to scare them all away.
No.
Your job is to coach up a young man so that he could dovetail into your family's culture and be a part of things and feel, I'm just imagining on wedding day, I mean, he's got to be throwing winks at you going like, you helped make this happen. I got her, but you gave me the keys.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. I mean, producing that kind of trust and intimacy between you and your future son-in-law is a great deal. So it's like you're feathering her nest. You're also feathering your nest with the way that you talk to him. So do you say no to every single young man, or there's some that you say yes to on the first blush?
My history is I've never said yes on the first pass.
Okay.
So we don't really take the dating route, but when it comes to dance, like I use dances as an example, it's an event, but at the same time, there is an air of exclusive kind of, relational equity that's being paid there at that dance. And so what we did was, is we just never had our daughters go to dances with boys on an exclusive level, because that was a very easy place for us to start that process of, yeah, it's just not, we don't live in exclusive relationships with boys. We live in family relationships. So, if that's the case, then you'll see each other at the dance and have fun. That's great. But this isn't necessary. So there was something behind me saying no. I think what has to be addressed is that society is bombarding our daughters that they would do whatever it takes to present themselves as lovely enough for someone to be attracted to them. And unfortunately in our society, that is almost purely physical in nature. And so I am not interested in having my daughter feel like that the reason why she's successful on any front, relationally, financially, in any endeavor, is because of physically she has to present herself a certain way. And so there's a lot of intention behind that. It's not just no, it's not a rigid just no. So I think that's important to understand that there's a lot of thought and heart behind why we have done what we've done. It doesn't make it easy. I think our daughters, listen, they're human and they've had to face a lot of adversity, and they're facing a lot of social pressures like a lot of kids.
I would even say you need to watch the movies that your 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 year olds are watching. You need to watch the TV shows that they're watching.
Yeah.
Because there's a story being told there as well.
100%.
And if you let your 12-year-old watch unlimited rom-coms, then they are learning a script for
That's right.
how a man finds a woman and what a woman must do to angle herself to land that guy. And that stuff can all be super confusing to somebody of who's you're trying to raise in a kingdom worldview.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does the boy then start to spend time with your daughter?
Spends time with me.
He spends time with you.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I'll use my oldest and her husband as an example. My oldest son-in-law, he's super funny. Really intelligent. He picked up really quickly on this. He realized that the way into my daughter's life was he needed to get into my life because I'm the gateway to life of the family. So he knew I gotta spend time with Pat so that I can spend time with the family, so that ultimately I can be in proximity to Makana, to this daughter. They had both been on a missions trip to Mozambique, to Africa. They were just happened to both be on the same trip together. Cut 2020, right? Now we hear about this afterwards, that there was like, oh, they saw each other in a different light. They knew each other beforehand. Oh, you know? And so he started spending time with me. And at the time I was doing a lot of training, racing, I did a lot of racing in like Ironman triathlon. And so he's like, hey, he starts asking me questions about bikes. He literally got interested in the things I was interested in. And so he ends up buying this bike for super cheap. He's like, hey, I want to go on a bike ride with you. And so he ends up going on a bike ride. And then out of that, I remember we get done with this bike ride one day and he goes, hey, can I talk to you? And I knew, I was like, can I talk to you? Sure. Yeah. Hey, I'm really interested in your daughter. And I just, out of honor, I just wanted to ask you if it was okay if I pursue her at a deeper level. And he had spent a little bit of time around our family, you know, at a meal on a Sunday. And I said, yeah, man, I said, I think that'd be fine. And then he and I really began just having more relationship. I think it was about a 2-year period before they got married. He would sit down with me and give me check-ins. Hey, I just wanted to have coffee and just give you a check-in.
That's awesome.
This is his wiring. So this is not prescriptive to every one of my son-in-laws, because this is not happened, but my oldest son-in-law has a business degree. He's finishing up his MBA. He runs a very successful construction company with his dad. He's just a stud that way. So he would sit down with
methodical
me.
Methodical thinker.
Yeah. He would periodically sit down with me and at a coffee, and he'd open his computer and he would have a PowerPoint breakdown of each one of the areas of his life. And how it was going, what the account of that area of his life looked like, and who was mentoring him in that area. And then he would look at me and he would say, do you have any insight that you would like offer me to help me be better?
Oh my gosh.
And he and I would talk. And inevitably those conversations would be formative conversations about not just you and your life be better, but I began laying foundation for what that looks like when these accounts actually are laying the pathway for you to be a husband and one day a father.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest hurdle though is that what we're talking about is so countercultural that when the boys drop into our family, there's a pretty significant learning curve for them.
Yeah.
Because it's so foreign.
Of course.
So they're like all of my friends are dating and doing it this way. And I'm sitting on a couch with this girl and her 6 siblings and now her niece and her nephew and her parents and potentially 1 or 2 other family members, right? Like what am I doing? This is not what I, to your point, this is not what I saw on that rom-com. This is not what's been presented to me. So that's also been a pretty, I would say that's a learning curve and a point of discussion with the boys that I've been able to talk with them and,
right.
And they've been open about it, you know, hey, this is really foreign to us.
You said something, I think it was around the Shabbat table. You said something like, we only will marry our daughters to members of the family.
Yeah.
Meaning this guy's already a part of the life of our family.
Right.
And the family has accepted him. We have worked him into the culture and fabric of our family. And now, sure, of course, we were happy for you to get married. It's a strange statement. And like what you're describing about sitting around with the entire family, it's like something out of a documentary or something, when the whole family will decide whether the boy is the appropriate one spouse for the child.
Yeah.
But
that is what's happening.
Absolutely. And,
100%.
There's gotta be part of you that's saying to the young man, there's the door over there.
Yes.
If you don't like the environment of this family and you want to go be Mr. Cool Guy and you want to, I mean, this is so common. You see a girl, you see her in the culture of her family. You go, I can't stand that family. I can't wait to take that girl out of her family so that we can go create something new and reinvent the wheel over here. Just not God's plan.
Correct.
There's supposed to be a family life that surrounds the entire thing. So one of my questions is, I know these are good guys that you found. Obviously, they're willing to go through the gauntlet. What happens with their relationship with their families of origin? Do you find yourself doing more fathering than their natural fathers, or what happens there?
No, I wouldn't say that. Our son-in-laws all have great, great dads. I am going to father my family and the home the way that I feel like God has asked me to do it. I'm going to be obedient to that. I think in some ways that's attractive. I think there's fruit. I think people naturally are going to go to where they see fruit. I think there's a natural bend in humanity to say, well, that seems profitable. That seems like it's working. I'm going to go do that. I love the fact that my son-in-laws come from families that they've spent time with. So there's even times that when we're spending time as a family, that they may, my daughter might be with her husband at his family's house. I'm not sitting with a young man who's marrying my daughter. My wife and I are having a conversation about two families being joined, not two people. I understand that my daughter is marrying a young man, but there is something, you can't escape it. There are two families that are being joined.
Right.
And so there, I'm not going to lie, there is a part of the evaluation to say, these two families are being joined. What does that look like? What are we sensing in this? If you're processing through that lens, I think you're able to work out the other things. I'll use holidays as an example. Like,
yeah,
you know, everyone wants to spend time with their family on holidays. So it's like, I don't try to give like, hey, I'm the dad. It's exclusive. You spend time here. You know, if you're not, you're out of the circle. You're out of, you know, there's no trust.
Well, I got one last question to ask you. I know I've imposed on your time. I want to say this. There's 10 questions in my mind, but I'm choosing one of them because I would love to talk to you about grandparenting. I'd like to talk to you about going on vacation with your whole family.
Ah, so good.
Maybe we'll do that another time, but there's a book that's been making the rounds, which I wonder if you've heard of, by Vodi Bakum. He has written a book called What He Must Be. What He Must Be, and the subtitle is If He Wants to Marry My Daughter. And so he walks through this process. I'm going to read a quote from that book. He says, "Unfortunately, most of us treat the search for a spouse like a person treats his search for a house to buy. We prefer to just ride around for a while until something catches our fancy. Similarly, we raise our children with vague expectations and expect them to somehow muddle through and find an acceptable suitor. However, without clear parameters, they're destined to make choices based on the popular adage, just follow your heart. The only problem with that is the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? We must find a better way. We must commit ourselves to preparing our children to find suitable mates without relying on the pagan, relativistic mythology that dominates our day. Divorce courts are filled with people who followed their hearts and married Mr. or Mrs. Right. There has to be a better way. And so he describes talking about, of course, he's going to be a follower of Christ. He must be a leader, not just a good guy. He must demonstrate that he's a leader and that he has the wherewithal to lead you. And he must lead not just like a bull through a china shop. He's got to lead like Christ. So he's got to be a servant. He's got to be deferential, but also a strong character. He's got to be committed to having children. That's a must. He's got to be committed to having children. And he throws out the four P's. He's got to be a protector, a provider, a prophet, and a priest. So it's a very helpful framework for anybody that's listening to this conversation and go, where do I go for more resources? I definitely recommend Vody. We're both Houston guys. I've known him since I was a teenager. He's a good guy. And he wrote a book called What He Must Be If He Wants to Marry My Daughter. So my question to you, Pat, is with your young daughters, how do you start describing the kind of man that we'll be looking for when our family is, this is how I always phrase it, when our family is ready to start looking for a husband? How do you set that up?
Yeah. When my wife and I were younger, we've been together since we were 17 and we started having kids at like 26. And how do I tell them? It's actually not even a verbal process. I think Chandra early on would make it very clear when my actions, because we haven't always been followers of Jesus. When we got married, we were not following Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And she made it very clear to me, even outside of following faith, even outside of a relationship with Jesus, she made it very clear to me that my actions were telling my daughters who to choose in their life. And
wow.
So I think what I would tell you is that there's a lot of things that I wish I could have shown my daughters better. I'm not perfect. Hence enter the need of God's deep grace and mercy in our lives as husbands and as dads. And there's probably some men that need to hear that. Like, you're not going to get it right all the time, man. But what it shows our daughters is that a leader is deeply aware of their imperfections, but they're also more aware of God's grace if they would repent and submit themselves and surrender themselves to God.
Amen.
And so, you know, Vody talks about being a leader. I'm going to replace that word with just obedience. And I've had a lot of conversations with my daughters and say, you know, this is not exhibiting leadership qualities. This isn't being a leader. Okay. And really what we're saying is he's not really being obedient to the order and the statutes and the framework that God has presented to humanity, that it will go well for you if you follow. And obedience is actually the bedrock of leadership. And I think what I've realized in my life is for all of the times that I get it wrong, I could probably say I was being disobedient. And that's the truth. And whether I'm being obedient or disobedient, I'm actually telling my child, I'm telling my daughter, I'm showing her, I am creating the same narrative that we started with. I'm creating a narrative for her to say, I am an example of who you should look for.
Yes.
And so what it did for me is I remember Chandra and I early on doing a marriage class. We had like 30 couples in this marriage class, and we were reading a book, and the statement in this book, and forgive me for not remembering the name of the book, the statement in the book, what if God created marriage for holiness in your life and not happiness?
Right.
The best way for me to frame what she's looking for in a man, it goes back to me. Is there integrity in how am I living my life? Am I living a life based on the pagan construct of whatever pleases you is what you should pursue? No matter what I'm saying with my words, my actions are actually probably a bigger distinguishing factor in what she's really absorbing.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I mean, in a certain sense, you know, to watch my daughters, now my older ones, I see the evidence of this, that what I'm looking for in a young man is I want them to exhibit a necessity on God's presence in their life, a necessity of the gospel in their life, a necessity of the ability to surrender and be obedient. And I don't think you can be any of the things that Vodi is mentioning without that heart.
Yeah.
These young men are going to struggle. They're human, you know? And so I'm not looking for a perfect young man. I'm not telling my daughter to look for a perfect young man. I'm telling my daughter to look for a surrendered young man.
Yes.
Because when they get it wrong, the surrender is what brings them back. And they're going to have tension and they're going to have difficulty, as I have in my life. And I think that's my encouragement then broadly, even to these young men, is to constantly to direct them back to Jesus. In Ephesians, it says that men, you should love your wife like Christ loved the church. Why? Because it's Christ-centric. It's bringing us back to Jesus. It's bringing us back to a place that I'm going to honor her and I'm going to wash her with the word and I'm going to do things in my life that are going to present her as holy and pleasing to the Lord.
Yes.
I'm not her God, but I can definitely be a guide. And
that's what
my heart longs for my daughters.
Right.
And it's also at the same time as a human, I feel like it's my biggest deficiency, meaning I am not perfect and I'm in desperate need of all those things as well. It's convicting. It makes me think about my choices. The same statement of marriage, the construct of marriage really helps create there's more of a holiness than a happiness factor. I'm just going to state overtly, being a father, it creates in me to live a life of holiness.
That's right.
And not happiness, because they're watching every single move. They're observing it, and you are not only writing a story of your life, but you're actually writing a narrative on their heart.
That's right.
And that's a weight that we carry, not a bad weight, but that's a weight we carry that I think is like, we should have an understanding of it. There's a level of reverence. It's not to drag you down. It's not chains and shackles, but I just think we've lost that as a society as a whole, but specifically as dads, the power of who we are. We give our daughters identity. Fathers give identity. And the biggest thing that our young girls in society are struggling with right now is they're struggling with an identity. And identity is born out of, am I loved? And that's our job. And that's what we do. And so I'm looking for a young man that if they can get everything that I just said right, here's what they're going to do. They're going to make sure that my daughter knows that she's loved. Mm-hmm. As we're told, husbands, love your wives. And then we're given all of the construct on how to do that.
Yep.
So that's not I don't know if there's a book in there like Vodi has, but
yeah,
that
has crossed my mind as we've been talking.
That's my heart, you know, for my daughters. And not just that, I went in by saying this. Chandra and I have a deep, deep burn in our bones for families. To be able to just love them and come alongside them and help them see produced in their life more than they can imagine. And for some of them, healing to take place, wholeness to take place, a flourishing to take place.
Yes.
And for them to step into things that they didn't even know existed. And maybe because of the family construct they were raised in. But our heart burns for that. Men, listen, you have what it takes.
Yes.
He's given you what you have, what it takes.
Yep.
And you might have gotten it wrong. You might have missed it, but you have what it takes. Mm-hmm. My job is to say, Lord, like Ezekiel 37, my job is to say, God, I'm going to present myself as bones, even in valleys that seems like I'm dry and dead. Here are the bones. And God, now I speak to your breath to breathe on these bones.
Mm-hmm.
The breath of Yahweh, the life-giving breath. Would you breathe? And that's my prayer for these young men that I encounter that are interested in my daughter is, God, beyond anything, would you breathe on them? They're bones. They're here, but would you breathe on them?
That's great, Pat. I'm very grateful to you and Chandra for the price that you've paid in opposing pagan culture.
Yeah.
And making a way and being a mentor and model for those of us who are further behind you. So thank you very much for your wisdom. It's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate you guys.